Step into our confessional. Confess all. We won't tell anyone. Just the entire nation. From Greatest Hits Radio.
Simon Mayo's Best of the Confessions podcast.
Well, Happy New Year to you, Sister Holly.
Thank you.
Happy New Year to you, Brother Matt.
Thank you, yes.
Happy New Year to you, Sister Susie.
Happy New Year, Simon.
What a lovely year this promises to be for all of us.
I'm sure it will, yes.
That was just a traditional greeting, I think, but it's the first Confessions podcast of the new year. As you already know from last week, we are continuing to bring you some of the best confessions from back in 2024.
Remember that?
Oh,
ages ago.
Days ago. Sister Susie is here, Brother Matt is here, Sister Holly is here. If I got them to say hello, they'd be feeling like they're building their party just a little bit. So we know that they're all here and all present and correct. So let's go down memory lane for some more of the top confessions. These are top tier, top drawer.
The very best. Yeah.
These are the ones that made Sister Holly go, you know what? These are so impressive. They're going to be in the best of the year part two. Okay. Mm-hmm. So coming up, we head back to school with Lady Jane and her science class that ended up with exploding frog guts.
Oh, yes.
Freddy's Tale, a novice electrician sent to a funeral parlour who found a very creative use for some silicone. Lucy goes to big lengths to make excuses as to why she never turned up at computer club. Brian's moving days interrupted by a figure lurking in the shadows. And Pastor Timothy deals with a busybody parishioner in a very creative way.
Yeah.
In you go. But first, we start with Colin, who found himself in a rather urgent situation whilst walking the dog, which ends up with a tangled web of lies in Breathe the Pressure. Exhale, exhale, exhale.
Simon Mayo's
Best of the Confessions podcast
from Greatest Hits Radio.
We won't tell anyone. What? Oh, sorry. I mean, we will tell everyone.
First of all, a warning in case you're eating.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
Good sign.
It's quite a stressful confession. It also has a sting in the tail. Mm. Father Simon and the Rectors of Retribution, my confession dates to the summer of 2021 when the country was in between lockdowns. While my wife was working from home, I, as a teacher, had finished for the summer, as had our daughter, Sammy. Tensions in the house were at an all-time high after months of being locked up together, the halcyon days of, let's appreciate this as we'll never get a chance to spend this sort of time together again, making way for, I'm going for a 7-hour walk to get away from you all. It was against this backdrop I decided to take Sammy shopping for some holiday items from the aforementioned industrial estate. We set off. Me with Rover, the dog, Sammy on her bike. All was well until we got to within 100 or so yards of the Poundland store we'd set off to visit. All of a sudden, I felt a tightening of my abdominal muscles and I bent over slightly. Being 40 and having felt this exact feeling several times before, I knew what it meant. A visit to the loo was in order and fast. Sammy, by this stage, was already at the door of the shop and I knew no amount of persuasion or bribery was going to get her to go back home. I made up my mind to quickly go into the store, buy whatever she wanted, and then make my retreat. I agreed to every suggested purchase that Sammy presented me with, shoved them in my rucksack and headed for home. However, by this point, my situation had moved from able to contain with intelligent breathing techniques to I can't hold her, Captain. Sammy raced ahead on her bike and I was left walking with caution with Rover the dog. Names have been changed. Obviously, I want to change the name of the dog.
Yeah.
Very important. Nevertheless, as I shuffled ever closer to home, I started to believe I could make it. But then disaster was to strike. As I had been moving so slowly, Sammy had raced ahead and out of sight. When I got to the T-junction at the end of the road where we'd had to make a left and cross, she'd made a right and I could see her cycling away into the distance. I cried after her, but she simply moved further and further away. At this point, my survival instincts kicked in and I remember thinking, at times like this, what would Baden-Powell do? And I noticed a row of bushes along the back of some houses,
yeah.
And I formulated a plan. I quickly tied Rover up to the nearest lamppost and burrowed my way to the back of the bushes. Time passed.
Yes, it did, didn't it?
I was finally free. Sammy, by this point, had U-turned and was repeatedly cycling past my hidden position, shouting out for me. Despite being 5 at the time, her voice was like a cross between Fred Elliott and Foghorn Leghorn. And I was panicking she'd bring unwanted attention to an already tense situation.
See, my plan was to wait for a minute, sneak out, untie Rover, collect Sammy and head for home. However, this is where my problems really began. An elderly couple out for a walk started to approach Rover, tickling her chin and looking around the place, presumably for her owner, meaning I couldn't sneak out from my position incognito. To make matters worse, Sammy then cycled up to them, and I could see a conversation taking place involving hand gestures and lots of pointing. The elderly man began examining Rover's collar and then took out his mobile phone. I could see him dialing it and then talking to someone. Although I was in denial, I knew exactly who he was talking to. Within a few minutes, my wife appeared, looking around bewildered. By this stage, revealing my location was simply not an option, so I allowed her, Sammy and Rover to scour the surrounding area for quite a good while until they disappeared from view. Once I was confident nobody was around, I left my position. Time was but a mere concept now, and I had no idea how long I'd been sitting in amongst the bushes. I headed for home, conscious of the numerous missed calls I had from my wife, family and friends. As I got closer to home, however, I found a sense of freedom, that maybe I could own this. I'd spent too many days making excuses for myself or shifting the blame to others. God had sent me a moment to embrace and become the man I was destined to become, and I was going to seize it. I knocked on my front door, and as my wife answered with her, "Where the heck have you been?" face on, I took a deep breath, closed and then opened my eyes and said, "I've just fainted." At first she was skeptical, but the detailed story of how I must have fainted into a pile of bushes began to win her sympathies. Wait for it. Father Simon and the Rectors of Retribution, I ask forgiveness not from my daughter, who had a great time out on her bike, not from the elderly couple, who probably still dine out to this very day on the story of finding an abandoned five-year-old and her dog. No, I ask it from my wife, who not only gave me a giant hug and an apology for being cross with me, but waited on me hand and foot for the next 3 days, yes, not letting me leave my bed or even change the channel on the television upstairs. She did leave me about 6 months later, but I'm sure it had nothing to do with this incident at all. I hope you can find it in your hearts to forgive me. Oh, that's very nice. Very good. That's from...
She's gone.
So that's what I meant by a sting on the tail.
Sting
in the tail, because it was all going fine and then all of a sudden not. I don't think that was too gruesome, but it was very, very stressful. Sister Holly.
I felt stressed even just listening to it. Maybe she left you, Colin, because you were lying so much, because the whole fainting thing was really poor, the fact you lied about that. Yeah, but lying to your partner, it's just never good. It's never a good thing to do. And then she was really caring for you. Did you not feel bad over those 3 days that you just lied? Also, why couldn't you have just... I think you should have just taken Sammy home and gone to the loo there, or found a public loo. Really, that's what you should have done in this story.
I don't think there was one.
Are you telling me that there was no loo near Poundland? None, not one. I find that surprising. And so, for all of these reasons, and also the fact that it's really gross going in the middle of some bushes, that is why I am not forgiving Colin.
That's in Surrey.
Don't do that.
It's obviously really gross. Unfortunately, we all do it. Maybe not always in bushes. I'm going to forgive. Imagine if the phone number on the dog collar had been his mobile phone.
That's what I was thinking.
Oh my goodness me, that would have been superb. But it was very, very funny all the same. Just for the Fred Elliott reference, I'm going to forgive. Yes, hilarious. And his wife's left him since then. Good. I mean, we've got to forgive him just because of all the horrible things that have happened to Colin. So yes, forgive him.
Something to confess.
Simon Mayo's Best of the Confessions podcast
from Greatest Hits Radio.
Father Simon and his delightful minions. Every week, my family and I tune in faithfully to your podcast. We often ponder whether the confessions are true or just creative writing exercises. Well, the reason for saying that is because what I'm about to confess to you is really 100% true. And after months of listening to you and the confessions, it really is time for me to confess to your listeners. Let me start by saying that I am genuinely a pastor of a Christian church, and I've changed all the names to protect those involved, as I still have to pastor some of them. Also, I haven't confessed this to my bishop, mostly because she's terrifying and and forgiveness might not be her strong suit.
No. Good, I like it.
That's probably narrowed it down quite a lot already.
Oh dear.
So here it goes. Being a pastor is a calling, but let me tell you, it's not an easy one. Every church has that one person who seems to exist solely to test our patience. They're the ones who sit by drafty windows and then complain about the cold. Or demand modern songs, and when we sing, them only demand the ancient hymns.
Oh, right.
What's going on there? Mm. The Apostle Paul might have called them a thorn in his side, but I call them ivy.
Oh.
Ivy was the queen of the Blue Rinse Brigade, a Mrs. Bucket-type character. And every day I prayed for Ivy. I prayed she'd stop being such a thorn in, well, everyone's side, to be honest. Yeah. And weeks went by and nothing. Months went by, still no change. Not praying very hard, Timothy, or maybe. So I upped my game and started lighting candles for her daily. By month six, I was practically running a 24-hour vigil. And then came the funeral of a gentleman in our church. It was raining heavily and the graveside was pure mud. Ivy, bless her persistent heart, stayed behind after the service, and as she stood by the grave, slipped and fell in. Now, Father Simon, these graves are deep, and while the coffin cushioned her fall somewhat, I don't think a coffin cushions anything, really.
Ouch!
She definitely landed with a muddy splat. Well, eventually she was rescued, but the Mrs. Bucket image was definitely not there anymore. Mud and water all over her. It was a wonderful sight to see. And she hadn't done any damage to herself, so that was all good news.
That's good.
Wow.
Now, fast forward a couple of years and Ivy herself passed away. I know that death is sad, but if I'm honest...
Go on.
My heart threw a little party.
Right.
She caused so much grief to me, my family, the church, and even the local community. And when it came for her funeral, as her pastor, I led the service. But here's the thing. Ivy had told me exactly how she wanted it to go. And Father Simon, I did the complete opposite. I'll admit it, I was fed up. I'd wasted good prayers, candles, and energy on her. The turnout for her funeral spoke volumes. Just me, the undertaker, and her sister showed up.
Right.
Not a single soul from the church came. It was as if the universe itself was holding a mirror up to her life. I think Timothy thinks he's turned into Charles Dickens at this point. And now here's the part where I really beg for forgiveness. If you remember when Ivy fell into the grave a few years earlier and the slip. Well, the slip entirely accidental?
Oh, no.
Let's just say gravity and a little help.
No.
Now, I have to say, Father Simon, I'm not proud of my actions. I've never done anything like it before or since.
So, just the once, then? Oh, that's okay.
I think once is enough.
So I fall at your feet, beg for forgiveness for Ivy, her sister, and for the handful of candles I wasted in vain. If it helps, I've genuinely tried to live a godly life. Except...
one time.
Except for that one push.
All those other ones, I didn't push them in. Yeah,
I mean,
just one.
I have to say, I think Father Timothy, I mean, I'm thank you, nice friend. I always think it's good to get clerical confessions, but I have to say, Father Timothy, you're pushing this a long, long way, and I suspect you're going to be struggling a little for forgiveness, apart from Matt. Sister Susie going first.
Well, I was kind of on Timothy's side here for quite a while because, you know, we get those type of people in the pub and it's, you know, they are annoying. And sometimes you just, but you have to do that inside rather than actually outside.
You mean you don't push them in the grave when you get an opportunity?
Don't push them in a grave. I can't believe he did that. She could have hurt herself. No, Timothy. I can't forgive you.
Let's see how Father Timothy does with Brother Matthew.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to forgive, but, I mean, it really doesn't matter how many candles you're lighting for someone. If you're then going to push your congregation into an open grave, then it doesn't really matter what else you're doing. Oh, that is super. Yeah. I'm going to forgive because that is the best laugh I've had in a while. Pushing, there are some people I don't particularly like. I'm not going to push them into an open grave.
Well, the wording is, the slip was not entirely accidental.
No.
Let's just say gravity had a little
a
help.
Nudge.
A slight nudge, or maybe with the foot.
Maybe the foot, maybe the...
Wow.
What did you go, Ivy? Oh, no, it is deep down there, isn't
How
it?
How did they get her out?
Well,
No, really.
Lit a candle.
Something to confess.
Simon Mayo's Best of the Confessions podcast
from Greatest Hits Radio.
Top confession from Pastor Timothy. I don't think we've had one quite so shocking as that for a while. For a vicar to push a parishioner into a grave and then completely reverse their wishes for a funeral.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, the second part of that is particularly unpleasant. Yeah. Well, actually, neither part of this. I mean, let's be honest.
Do you think he should be defrocked as a result of that?
No.
Okay, fair enough. So we move on. But clergy, we would like 2025 to be a year when you maybe unburden yourself, because who are you going to confess to?
That's true.
From, yeah. You know, yeah. Big man.
That's right. Or the big woman, indeed. So, so send us your stories. You can be as anonymous as you like. Confessions at greatesthitsradio.co.uk. This is usually the part of the podcast where we look at the latest correspondence on the parish notice board. But because we have so many amazing confessions to bring you, we just have time to read out this one, which says, confessions are back for 2025. We're waiting for submissions. Keep them coming. That's it. That's the
right. Okay.
On the
yeah.
Board.
Yeah. Nice. Great. And succinct.
Bit of, yeah. It's sort of like self-promotion. Mm-hmm. A little bit of corporate nonsense.
Yes.
Confessions at greatesthitsradio.co.uk. That's what you need to remember. Mm-hmm. Now, there's just time for a little reminder of some of the filth that made it to the CD section of the podcast, the Mark Knopfler, marked not for broadcast section, in case you're wondering what's going on there.
No one's going to want you around, are they?
No.
Because of the
because of the D and V.
Because of the D and the V.
Mm-hmm.
Threw up on your best friend's carpet at 3 o'clock in the morning, okay, and then strategically placed your mate near said vomit to make it look as though he was the culprit.
Ah.
Blocked the plumbing for the whole students' union. But having consumed alcohol is no excuse for putting a goldfish into your mate's drink. I can't believe I'm actually saying these words out loud by putting laxatives in his sugar and
what?
Coffee on a weekly basis. Are we suggesting there that Debbie was getting it on?
Yes.
In on the public restroom.
On the baby changing yes. room.
Are you released?
Oh, what?
A cascade.
Okay, yeah. No, I've got
liquid
it now. Yeah. Probably.
Bench.
Yes.
Ooh.
And blame the smell on a baby. It's sneakily leaving the restaurant via the emergency exit in the women's toilets and not paying for the bill is illegal.
That is illegal.
It is no excuse to add some of your bodily fluids into a very expensive hand cream.
That was very tawdry, I feel.
Mm. My kind of stuff.
Yep, you should see the stuff that doesn't make it to the Mark for Knopfler section. Mm-hmm. So let's get back to the confessions that actually made it on air and have risen to the top like the cream, as opposed to the scum which float to the bottom. In a moment, Lucy tells a whopper of a lie to get out of a computer club, but first we are joining Brian, who gets an interesting visitor with an excellent accent in Filthy Lucre.
Shh, shh, shh. We won't tell anyone.
What's your secret?
Simon Mayo's Best of the Confessions podcast.
Brian, thank you, Simon, Matt, Susie and the team. I've been a long-time listener to Confessions at Drive Time. Thought I would seek forgiveness of my own. 11 years ago, my fiancé, now wife, had just moved into a cosy terrace house in West Yorkshire. We'd taken a few days off to unpack the boxes, get the house in order, you know how it goes. After the last lot was offloaded, following a brief romantic lunch atop some boxes, filled with the glee of a new home, my wife and I agreed that she would tackle the upstairs boxes and I would handle the kitchen and the living room. I started well, but after a few boxes, lost interest and went in search of my games console.
Ah.
I see. Huh. Having ensured the fridge, there will be a few nodding.
Yes.
Going, yes, this sounds like my situation. Having ensured the fridge was stocked with a few ales earlier in the day, they had now reached the appropriate temperature and I dutifully set up the television and console to have a well-deserved rest. Several ales in and making good work of storming the beaches of Normandy.
Okay.
Is that Call of Duty?
Call of Duty, I think that is.
Okay.
Yeah.
I saw a flicker of a man pass our window. Through the frosted glass of our front door, I saw the shadow of a man glancing furtively left and right. He looked like a wrong'un to me. I was confident that he was a would-be burglar. You can tell, you know.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Said ne'er-do-well then produced the shadow of a set of bolt cutters and began going to work on the hinges of our front door.
Wow.
bolt cutters, front door and the hinges. Yeah. Maybe he's right. Chaos ensued as I leapt into action across the sofa to confront them. However, the door was locked and there was no key to be seen in reach. So I put all my 15 stone of fury against the door to brace it, shouting some very choice words through the door at the burglar.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He muffled something back and continued to work the cutters. He obviously meant business. I shouted to my wife upstairs to ring the police as we were clearly under attack. Another muffled voice came through the door. I shouted back that if he was to come in, he wouldn't end well for him and that the police were on their way. Hoping to heaven that I wouldn't have to follow through on my brave words, as all I had to hand was a feather duster and some Mr. Sheen.
Oh, right.
Which is not really advice for fighting crime.
No.
He continued working away with the bolt cutters. By this time, my wife was being reassured that there were several response units blue lighting their way to the area, as there was clearly an imminent threat. The gall this burglar had to keep going, despite my exhaustive profanity, was disconcerting, to say the least. I finally summed up my strength, and with all the poise and courage of a general delivering an eve of war battle speech, I firmly shouted, "The police are on their way, so you'd better scram."
Scram. Oh,
or words to that effect. Yeah, yeah. At this point, I felt the letterbox open against my now dead leg and was shocked to think that this relentless burglar was now trying to come in through the letterbox. Then, in a voice that, if pushed, was something like Ray Winston's.
Oh, really? Well, that's fortunate.
Yes.
Okay, here we go then.
The burglar said, "I've only come for what is mine."
Oh.
Now, these were chilling words, let me tell you. What precisely did he think was his? My games console? The house? My worldly goods? I encouraged him to go away immediately. Mr. Winston then calls through the letterbox, "You, Sonny Jim, need to pipe down." Pipe Dan.
Dan.
This was clearly like one of those home invasion movies. I needed to protect my property with all my wit and guile. How many assailants were there? Were they wearing masks? Did any of them look like the invaders in No One Will Save You? Where was my hockey stick when I needed it? Anyway, then Ray was back. "Let me be clear," he said. "I've come for one thing and one thing only." OMG, I thought. Is it me he's after? My games console again? My wife? Finally gets mentioned.
Yes, I was going to say, games console came first, though. Yeah.
My heart was pounding. My palms were sweating. Ray says, "I'm here, sunshine, to take the for sale sign down from your house." The guy was an estate agent's underling. For heaven's sake. Absolutely mortified, I tiptoed away from the front door, signalling to my wife to cancel the cavalry, as it had been a somewhat embarrassing misunderstanding. He finished wrenching out the sign from the brickwork beside our doorframe, loaded it into a van and hightailed it down the street. I swear I could still hear his mate's laughter at the bottom of the road, just as the sound of sirens flooded the air. So I obviously need to seek forgiveness, firstly from my wife for panicking her into thinking we were being invaded, and for the fact that we couldn't show our faces in town for a while. At least she was now assured that I could handle such a situation with dignity and calmness should it arise again, although she still does answer the door 90% of the time. Secondly, apologise to the police, who were only slightly amused, having dashed to the scene in search of a prolific burglar, only to find that we'd wasted quite a few officers. Valuable time, but we didn't realise that at the time. Thirdly, to the poor fella who looked like a wrong'un, who was berated through a frosted door, but who undoubtedly had an amusing tale to tell when he was down the pub that evening. Well, he might just think that, Brian, you're a little bit strange for judging someone on their silhouette. Mm. Mind you, I suppose the big pliers would have scared most people. Sister Susie, what do you say?
Well, Brian, I feel like, you know, the person could have knocked on the door and just said what they were going to do before they started doing
That's
it.
True.
So I kind of understand where he's coming from there. However, he was playing video games when he should have been unpacking and drinking beer. And for that reason, I can't forgive him, because just get the thing sorted. You're supposed to be doing. I bet his wife was working really hard upstairs.
I suspect she wasn't taking a well-earned rest with some beers and Call of Duty.
Yeah.
Our brother Matthew.
I mean, if we're going to damn people for playing video games and drinking beers, then there's going to be a whole load of line of people who are guilty. And I am not going to be blaming them. But I agree with Suze. Who doesn't knock on the door? You would knock on the door and say, "I'm taking the for sale sign down." I remember with our house, I had to take the for sale sign down myself. It was there for weeks. I'm to take it down myself. Imagine that.
I can't imagine that.
No, it was a nightmare.
What, with you wrenching it off?
Yeah, Gorilla Man, yanking it out of the earth. Yeah, we should come round to mine.
Okay, that the estate agent underling.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Come round with your bolt cutters and get rid of mine. So, for that reason, I'm going to forgive.
Confess all. We won't tell anyone. Just the entire nation. Simon Mayo's Confessions.
Father Simon and the Holy Collective. My confession, albeit fairly recently, still haunts me. In the autumn of 2022, different times, I moved to Bristol for university studies, just down your way, Suze. Yes. It was a chance for me to study what I loved, be out of my family house and have a fresh start. Merely a week into my new life, the events organisation officer arrived in my accommodation and told us all about the freshers' fair at the student union. Soon enough, I was signing up to clubs I never went to just to get a free pen. And, of course, which most people do anything for a free pen. Mm-hmm. And sipping a hideously overpriced alcoholic beverage, a man approached me. Let's call him John. John was the head of the computing club, had glasses which steamed up when he talked, and wore a lamb's wool jumper in the summer, which was obviously too small for him. "Hello, would you like to sign up?" says John, shouting and thrusting a clipboard in my face. I can't explain the answer that came out of my mouth, Father Simon. Was it the alcohol? Did I have pity on the poor lad? Was I appeasing some childlike glee for computers that I never knew I had? "Why, yes, thank you, young sir," I replied, and signed my name. I regretted it as soon as I'd done it. John walked away and I scolded myself. There was no way I was actually going to go to John's computer club, but I felt awful signing up regardless. I never did turn up to a single meeting at the computer club, and being on a campus with over 2,000 students, I never saw John either. Until the night that I did, which was Halloween night. It was my first Halloween, not sitting in my bedroom as my parents opened the front door to children in scary costumes, so I decided I was going to go to a local nightclub. Myself and my friend, we'll call her Maeve, got dressed up and headed over into town. As the night went on, Maeve had met another fellow student, so I was acting as her wingwoman from afar. And as my bed was calling my name, I felt a tap on my shoulder. I turned around and I saw him. It was John, dressed as a pizza.
Oh.
Obviously for Halloween.
Oh, Halloween.
With the most disappointed look on his face, it made my blood run cold. "Where have you been?" he shouted. "You haven't been to a single meeting, not one. You missed all of them. We've had interesting meetings, speakers, and days out, and group discussions."
Group discussions?
I mean, there's nothing more exciting than a group discussion at computer club. Now, Father Simon and the Holy Collective, I do not endorse my behaviour, which I'm about to tell you about, but he took me so by surprise, he was so demanding that I shouted back, "It's because I haven't come because my mother died."
Oh, no.
This was clearly devastating for John to learn, and to learn it at full volume. He was crestfallen and his mouth dropped open. My mother is, of course, alive and well.
Okay.
But before John could answer, I grabbed Maeve and we left the nightclub. Next term, our usual building was relocated to the same one that John was in. Not sure how you relocate a building, but anyway, yeah. I had to endure months of pity faces from him and mumbled sympathies, which only ate at my guilt further. I'm seeking forgiveness as I would like to formally apologise to John, the computing club, everyone who shouts, and to my mother for spewing these lies. I lie awake at night going over the whole scenario in my head and just cringing. I hope you can find it in your heart to forgive me. Well, I suspect we probably can, actually, because on the spur of the moment, and you've had a couple of lager shandies, you have to come up with a reason. John was convinced. Let's see what Sister Susie is going to be saying. I suspect she's unimpressed.
Oh, well, Lucy, I was with you for so long of that because, you know, who hasn't enthusiastically signed up to too many things when they've just been, you know, just too excited?
Group discussions.
Yes, you miss them. And I was like, well, of course you're not going to go to computer club. Who wants to go to computer club? I'm sure there's lots of people out there. But I don't think I can forgive you. As much as you just blurted it out, you should have come clean at some point and told him that you just didn't want to go to computer club. Just be honest.
Yes.
And so I can't forgive you.
Okay, that's what I thought you might have said, but let's see what the brother with no morals has to think
yes,
about.
Yes, I'm definitely going to forgive, and here is why.
Yes.
Number one, we all agree that in these situations, you always sign up for far too many clubs and societies. You've no intention of going. And by the way, all those clubs and societies know that. They get your subs to start off with, but they know you're never going to turn up. Also, I strongly suspect John was trying it on with Lucy, and it was his opening line of, you've not been to any of our meetings.
Come out with me.
Yeah, exactly. And I've come here dressed as a pizza. And
that's always a winning move.
Yeah, definitely not a winning move from John. So, you know, I'm going to forgive because, I mean, obviously we'd rather that Lucy hadn't gone down the dead mother route. But,
yes.
You know,
yes.
She committed. So yes, forgiven.
From Greatest Hits Radio.
Simon Mayo's Best of the Confessions podcast.
Confess all. We won't tell anyone.
I mean, lying about a parent dying is a new low.
It is.
Yeah.
Well, yes.
I mean, well.
No, I was going to say, there's quite a few lows.
Is it a new low or is it not a new low?
No, no, no. I'm going to say it's just above the other low.
What is the other low?
There are other lows. There are so many other lows, Holly. Let me document the lows. Lots of lows.
Anyway, before that point. Was Brian's confession, Filthy Luca, which featured, I thought, an excellent Ray Winston accent.
Yeah.
And Matt going off on a tangent about how he had to take down his own for sale sign.
Yes,
in
I
his
did.
House.
Yes. What was that about?
Yeah, it was complete nonsense. That's what it was about. Still to come on this here Confessions podcast, we are heading to what feels like a sitcom in a funeral parlour when a vacuum cleaner gets too close to the deceased. In Electrician Freddy's Confession, Burning Hoops of Fire. But first, Lady Jane is mixing up a very dangerous substance number one in what we called Don't Know Much About a Science Book. Again, another musical reference, which I'm sure you've got.
Yeah, they're all very good.
Something to confess.
Simon Mayo's Best of the Confessions podcast
from Greatest Hits Radio.
There are elements of this. I think this is like a 12 certificate.
Oh,
it does contain scenes with a scalpel, and there are also various scenes where we're doing the equivalent of pixelating.
Oh, really?
Okay, to avoid giving too much detail away. Father Simon and the Mediators of Mercy, you have aired two confessions recently. Gordon's French linguistic woes and Nigel's magnetic milk mischief. They respectively prompted and reinforced the realisation that I need to finally confess to an incident that occurred far too many years ago in different times. However, I fear that this may be destined for the role of shame, which is precisely what I felt at the time. I, like Gordon, grew up in the three-school system. All began well in middle school. Science was my favourite subject, and I found every aspect utterly fascinating. Soon I was top of the class. In fact, I had so outpaced the curriculum that the wonderful science teacher set me experiments and tasks to do from the first year GCSE syllabus, as well as a few things that would not be in any school chemistry books, but were a lot of fun. I was happily occupied in a corner on my own while she taught the rest of the class. As a shy, somewhat nervous child, this was utter bliss. Unfortunately, all of that ended when, arriving at class one day, we discovered that the wonderful teacher had left to be replaced by a mean, grumpy, incompetent fool.
Oh.
All were... Not to put too fine a point on it. All my experiments were gone because he didn't have time to waste on special treatment and I would just have to learn like everyone else.
Mm.
Well, I had already learned... I had already learned, and worse, he was getting it all wrong. His lessons were littered with rudimentary mistakes and errors. I would never normally have dared to speak up, but this was important, so I frequently found myself having to correct him on the basics. I bet that went down well. I consoled myself that at least I would have new teachers and new things to learn when I moved schools and obviously picked all the sciences for GCSE. Well, the report he gave me must have been utterly terrible because even though I got A star for every test, when I moved up to the big school, I was placed at in the very bottom set.
Mm.
I, a dainty, shy, nervous, nerdy, girly swot, found myself surrounded by Neanderthals.
Oh, right.
And the bullies were unsupervised and bored. I felt that the only way to survive, to prevent the terrifying barbarian horde that my classmates comprised, some of them already had moustaches, from grinding me to a pulp for their lunch, was to attempt to be cool by teaching some of the more colourful experiments from my extra tuition. It is this attempt at self-preservation that leads me to my confession, as well as a school myth that has lingered on long enough for my nieces and nephews to have heard the story when they transferred to the same school many years later.
Wow.
The science technician's preparation room was attached directly to the classroom in which I and the beasts were housed, and it was left unlocked. All the equipment and chemicals I could possibly need were at hand. Amongst all the treasures I found were all the ingredients I would need to make up the bases required to create what I'm calling very dangerous substance number one. Okay. This is a substance that is reasonably inert when in solution, but becomes ridiculously unstable when dry, detonating in an energetic explosion with the slightest touch, creating a small flash, bit of a pop, and a lot of gas. Chemists will know exactly what we're talking about. Everyone else can just go with a very dangerous substance, yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Number one. Yeah. My notion was that I would teach the petrifying pack of ogres how to make a weak solution of very dangerous substance, number one. They could soak paper in it and then leave it to dry, and it'd be like flash paper. Unfortunately, the squad of blood-curdling brutes quickly bored of this game, and mixing themselves an undiluted batch of the solution, inevitably the Morlocks stumbled upon the science technician's fridge and the trays of dead frogs ready for dissection in biology. Soon these frogs were dunked and thoroughly soaked in this substance. I don't know what I expected, but what happened next was even worse. The frogs were returned to the trays, neatly arranged and put back in the fridge. Obviously, I wasn't in the dissection class myself when it happened, but everybody heard about it afterwards. As scalpels were drawn and flesh incised, the students, their hair, clothes, books, bags, the desks, the walls around them, even the ceiling, everything, became far more intimately acquainted with frog anatomy than the curriculum had ever intended. Descriptions of the carnage resembling a painting by Jackson Pollock and included the words viscera and pebble dash. Many students were understandably ill and upset. Parents were called and very serious questions asked. There was a lot of gossip around the school about how it could have happened. Some people hypothesized sabotage. Others blamed poor storage and preparation. Therefore, I humbly seek forgiveness, Father Simon, from the entire biology class, the teacher who suffered along with them, the science technicians that had their work questioned, and the cleaners who had to clear the ceiling for the first time. I kept quiet out of fear, and I'm very sorry. I realise now that the teacher was so lax, I could probably have just gone to the library instead and saved everyone so much trouble. Fortunately for me, my parents persevered, the school recognised I was in the wrong class, and I am now a biochemist working in oncology and specialise in breast cancer research because good teachers really do inspire.
Yes, they do.
Okay, yeah. Well, that's a very interesting ending there for Lady Jane, who's clearly doing some good work, but in the process made up very dangerous substance number one and applied them, well, friends, colleagues applied them to frogs. Sister Susie, what do you say?
Well, I do feel for Lady Jane because, I can understand what it's like to be a nerdy girl in a class full of very colourful characters, because that was me in one of my classes at school, and it's not very nice. However, I just don't think I can forgive, because it caused absolute carnage and frog guts everywhere, and no, can't forgive for that reason alone.
Okay, Brother Matthew.
I mean, there is a school of thought that says if you're going to teach the Neanderthals in your class how to make very dangerous substance number one, they're not just going to stick with paper, are they? They were always going to be applying it to something else that was going to explode. However, the chemistry teacher wasn't very good, was he? And everyone was a bit bored. And also, the frog did get dissected, didn't it? That was the whole point, is we're going to dissect some frogs, and that did happen. It's just that the frog was obviously thrown all over the room and up everyone's nose. So for that reason, I'm going to forgive.
Simon Mayo's
Best of the Confessions podcast
from Greatest Hits Radio.
We won't tell anyone. What? Oh, sorry. I mean, we will tell everyone.
Going to give it a certificate 12, I think, or maybe it's PG-12, something like that. Father Simon and the Confessional Collective. This event took place in 1988 in Salford, which is the city I was born in and resided in, and I was a newly qualified electrician and still a bit green. One particular place of work was a local funeral director's, which was, well, that's where we are, which was one of the larger ones at the time. I had visited there a couple of times previously to lend a hand to one of the older, more experienced electricians that worked there. This particular day, I was informed by the boss that I was going alone to install a ventilation system. My boss met me on site and took me into a part of the building that I had never attended before, the Chapel of Rest. What could go wrong? Inside, there were four cubicles, all made of wood panelling, sat alone in a church-like room. He explained that I had to install a grill in each of them, which would be connected to a, this is where I lose it a bit, a flexible duct, which would be installed in the ceiling void and then couple up to an extract system at a later date. Easy job, I thought, and went to get my tools from the van. Once returned, I opened the first cubicle and removed the tiles from the grid-type ceiling, clambered up the step ladders and began to cut the hole in the partition wall to the next cubicle. Once completed, I moved to cubicle two and completed the work and repeated the work. When I pushed open the door for cubicle three, I was greeted with a large coffin on a silver stand, with the lid removed and a smartly suited dead person, arms folded across their chest. Let's call him Keith.
Let's.
Keith. Although I had seen the dead before, this was the first time alone, and I started getting very nervous as the other cubicles were empty. I went to see the funeral director at his office and asked, please, could you move the coffin into an empty cubicle?
Yeah.
And unfortunately for me, he said he could not, as the family members were due to visit that day and pay their respects, and they have free rein to visit at any time. So I reluctantly carried on. Whilst reaching over the coffin to remove the ceiling tile, a few blobs of damaged tile fell onto Keith in the coffin. In a blind panic and not being sure what to do for the best, I nipped to the cleaner's cupboard outside and got a vacuum cleaner out. Carefully, I started to suck up the white specks from the velvet material in the coffin around the head. There was a small piece on Keith's cheek.
No.
Diligently, I tried to suck it up, but the vacuum cleaner attached its nozzle to Keith's cheek. I quickly pulled it off, but it also pulled off some of the makeup, which I didn't realise they'd used on Keith, trying to hide the much lighter patch of the chap's red face. I rolled up some paper towels to wipe his cheek, but this made it worse. Keith now looked more like adamant. Anyway, I thought, I've nearly finished here. Let's just get the towels back in the ceiling and get out. Unfortunately, in my haste, I hadn't realised I'd left my large screwdriver in the ceiling void and caught it with the tile, knocking it through the open ceiling. Like a slow-motion movie, it fell and landed slap-bang on Keith's forehead and bounced off, settling by his folded arms. When disembarking my stepladders, I noticed it had left a large flap of skin, which was protruding from Keith like a little devil's horn.
Okay. Oh, no!
No, that's not good.
No. In total panic, I tried to press it down with my thumb, but it just kept popping back up again.
Would do, yeah.
Now in desperation, thinking the family might arrive at any time soon, I did what I had to do, Father Simon. I quickly fetched a tube of silicone from my van and squeezed out a small blob under the flap of skin and firmly pressed down with the butt of my hammer.
Right.
Holding it for 30 seconds.
No.
Okay, 30 to my relief, seconds. The flap had stuck back down.
Yeah.
I gathered up my tools and fled the scene.
Yeah.
Back at work, I told nobody of my day from hell and have told nobody for over 30 years. I now feel it's time to shed this terrible day from my memories of my younger work events. I can't really ask for forgiveness from the poor chap, Keith, whose face I altered, but maybe forgiveness from his family visitors later that day. You might have been wondering who applied the makeup like that and why he looked like adamant. Or asking, what was that thing on his forehead due to the demise. Anyway, I tried to make him presentable, so I hope I'm forgiven. I don't expect forgiveness from the sisters, but hoping Brother Matt has some sympathy.
Yep.
I mean, it's usually a good bet, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, let's see where we go with today's funereal confession. I mean, your heart goes out to Freddie, doesn't it? He's trying to do his best, but it didn't end up very well.
Well, he was trying to do his best, and, you know, it wasn't his fault that that man was in that room, and why couldn't they move him to a different room? They had three other rooms that were empty. Or they could have just put the lid on the coffin, surely, and therefore, if a screwdriver fell out of the ceiling,
yes,
it would have hit the outside of the coffin. So I do feel for Freddie here. But I am an electrician's daughter, so I do know what he was talking about. And it was an easy job. Yes. And he just made a muck of it. So for that reason, yeah. I'm not going to forgive him.
It wasn't the cough that carried him off. It was the coffin that carried him off in.
That's so true.
Exactly.
Thank you. A little wisdom there from the two Ronnies.
Yes.
Brother Matthew.
Well, we are certainly in 70s sitcom land here, aren't we? Yeah. I love this confession. Very, very funny. As soon as he got the vacuum cleaner out, he's like, well...
It's the proximity of the vacuum cleaner and Keith.
Too close.
And then the screw. I'm going to leave the screwdriver up there. No, that's not a good sign. But good use of the silicone. Well done on that, Freddie. Yeah, just who'd have thought that would work? And it's their fault for getting their work done. Why were they getting the work done when they've got bodies there? Shouldn't have done that, should they? Maybe it's the funeral director's fault. Yes, definitely them. Definitely not the dead. Can't blame them. So for that reason, I'm going to forgive.
Don't quite understand your reasoning there.
No.
Shh. We won't tell anyone. What's your secret?
Simon Mayo's Best of the Confessions podcast.
I kind of feel as though you make it up as you go along.
That would be quite the accusation.
Uh-huh.
That I would.
Who knew that a bit of silicone could stick a flap of skin on a forehead?
Well, he was improvising there, wasn't he?
Of a dead person.
Yeah, very much pulling it in from all corners.
I mean, don't try it at home.
No, don't try it at home.
It only works on dead people.
It does, yes.
But don't even try that.
Don't try it on any dead people either.
And before that was Lady Jane's confession involving the very dangerous substance number one. Exploding frogs and pebble dashing a whole science class. She did end up as a biochemist working in breast cancer research, so that makes it everything okay.
Yeah, it does. Makes everything okay then.
You don't think so?
No. Ruin the whole science class. Frog guts everywhere. Disgusting.
Yes.
That's all.
Okay.
If you want to know what was in dangerous substance number one, you could write to Susie.
And I won't tell you.
At the pub, and she will just sell you a gin and tonic.
Yeah.
That's the way it goes. Mm-hmm. That wraps up. I'll look back at some of the best confessions of last year.
Yeah, because it's now the new year.
If you've been inspired by any of them, send us your own confession. Maybe it'll get included in December's roundup of the year. Send them to confessions@greatesthitsradio.co.uk. Now it's over to Matt, because he has with him, about his person somewhere, this week's secret code phrase.
Yes. So the code phrase is obviously going to be sent to Simon on social media. So let's put, where have you been? Where have you been? Is your secret code phrase for this week.
You can thread me at Mr. Simon Mayo, or you can find me on Blue Sky, where I'm under my own name.
Yes, you are.
Which is a very, very conventional thing.
Good for you.
Finally, don't forget to share the Confessions podcast with all your friends and tell them that it's so joyful. We'll be back with the first confession from 2025 next week, as in the live confessions.
Yes.
Live on Drive Time. What a show that is. Until then, from the pub, but actually still in the studio, Sister Susie says...
Ta-ra!
From the cupboard, do tat. Sister, have you given out any tat in this podcast?
No.
Does that mean there's going to be like a superstore?
Well, last episode, you know, I mean, the past few episodes, we've given out quite a bit of tat, really. Yeah. So, you know, we've got to ration it. We can't just give it out to everyone, otherwise it's just not special anymore.
We can't really post it in between Christmas and New Year.
So no, that's true.
Right. Mm. That's right. It's like interminable, though, isn't it? The bit between Christmas and New Year.
Oh, right, that bit is. Mm. Oh, yes.
It's like the space-time continuum. It's like, how long is this going to go on for? Do you think?
Yes, no, that is true.
We're out the other side now.
Mm. Yeah, that's true. Yes, but when we were in it.
When we were in it. Oh, remember that? Good.
Wow.
Dear, it never ends.
Yeah, like this podcast. Okay, so Susie says, Holly says, Matt says,
bye.
Thank you for listening. See you soon.
Confess All.
Simon Mayo's Best of the Confessions podcast.
My name is Luca. Shut it.